Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. On the docket today, we hope to get to some SummerSlam predictions, another tournament in AEW. Not exactly how I addressed it to Les via email, but we'll talk about that as well.
I'll repeat that later, how you address it to me. Go ahead.
A few other happenings in the world of wrestling, but obviously it has been a very busy week since the last time we got a chance to get together last Friday morning, Les. So it's the lead story in this week's edition of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. At f4wonline.com is where you can get it and subscribe online if you like, and if you're not already a member. Obviously, it's the resignation of Vince McMahon. There are a lot of questions around this that I'm going to ask you regarding that. But obviously, the whole thing about did he or didn't he pay for these hush money payments with corporate funds, the filing or amended filings WWE is in process of making makes it seem as though it looks like he's either making good now or made good at some previous time in the past, but it had never been mentioned in any of their filings, which is why it's being amended. Rumor has it, a few articles over the course of the last 7 days intimate that perhaps the Securities and Exchange Commission was looking into it, and perhaps federal prosecutors as well. And anytime federal people are involved, it may make good sense to officially step down, which Vince McMahon did this week, Les.
Wow, huh. Vince's battles with the federal government, they haven't been many, but they sure take precedent over anything else.
Well, I'm pretty sure he wasn't hoping for another chapter.
I'm sure he was. Lord. You know, this is the point. You know, the crazy thing is, did he or didn't he? I would guess that if that all, that will there be a lawsuit come up somewhere here before this is all over? I mean, okay, he stepped down, but does that exonerate him? I mean, is it still possible for a stockholder to, because I'm not a legal expert.
Oh, you mean all those law firms that were looking into the nature of the, that's a great question. I do not have the answer to that, but it appears as though he was not really concerned about that. It seems as though when he got wind of the Securities and Exchange Commission, his tune changed. So I don't know.
But it'll hang out there for a while, I'm sure. And, of course, the conversation now is how much is going to change, how much will it change. Of course, we have, you know, SmackDown is tonight. We don't know if or why or if it will or how much. NXT, I don't know. A lot happening. That parking lot's dangerous. They need to put security in that parking lot all the time. People are going to die in that parking lot pretty soon. So there's more fights going on in that parking lot than there are in the ring. I didn't see anything that I thought had improved NXT. And I mean, it was just there. You know, a couple of decent matches, but the storylines and the angles are just, I don't know. They don't carry a lot. They don't have a lot of teeth, I don't think. So I think they need to, I'm hoping here, you know, Helmsley, that's his baby anyway. It all started with him, and it was a hell of a show. It was the best show in the company for a couple of years. And it doesn't even have to go back to that again. But it should. I think they need to take it back to take a little of this. Everybody has decided that every show should be the comedy hour or something. I don't know. I'm bored silly with comics in the wrestling business. Not, you know, legitimate good comics I still would enjoy, but the wrestling clowns I've had my fill of, I think. But I do believe that you know, and I agree. You said the same thing. How does Vince not going to continue to put his 2 cents worth in?
Yeah, see, this is the thing. Obviously, for corporate reasons, it's very important that he ended up, he said retiring. The WWE 8K filings that we just referenced said resigning. You know, I don't think it's tomato-tomato either. That's probably relevant to somebody in an official capacity. But the deal is, like I said, he's the father of the co-CEO. He's the father-in-law of the head of creative and talent relations. The bottom line to me, Les, is unless he chooses to, the idea that I'm supposed to believe the business isn't going to come up in conversations between the majority shareholder and members of his family, who are two of the more important people in the company now, is just insanity. He has to believe he's got a direct line hotline to talk business with them, with the things he approves of or disapproves of anytime he wants. Whether they want him to have that line or want him to think he has it is a whole different deal. Who knows what's in their heads? But there's no way this guy's walking away at this point after he clearly made television appearances in the last few weeks designed to send the message that he had no plans on going anywhere. You know, I don't think he's going to his boat in Florida and hanging out for the rest of his life. There's no way this guy doesn't think he's going to be influencing plenty of decisions in this company, even if he's not the chairman of the board anymore.
Yeah. A friend of mine said, what else? He said, all he's ever done and all he does is wrestling.
Yeah.
What will he do if he doesn't do any wrestling wise? I said, my God, he could start spending some of that money he's made. And doing, you know, just doing some things off the top of his head. What do I want to do today? But you're right. But I said to the guy, I said, no, you're right. He's going to continue, you know, it's still in his head. And yes, he's going to add some in any conversation he has with Stephanie or Triple H or, I wonder how Shane feels about all this.
That's a good question. It's so funny, given what we heard about Royal Rumble time, with Vince essentially dismissing Shane from the company because of, differences in creative, shall we say, with respect to the way the Royal Rumble was laid out. Whether or not Shane has a thought one way or the other, is Shane cackling to himself in private moments? Is he going to be calling his sister and or his brother-in-law asking about an opportunity to get back in? It's never seemed to me since the first time he left years and years ago. You know, it seems like something he likes and something he's happy to do, not anything he's necessarily pressed about. So I don't know that it makes a material difference to Shane one way or the other, but it would be interesting if he turns up as soon as Vince departs.
Yeah, and honestly, I know he thinks he's an important part of these big shows, and I'm sure he probably figures that everyone loves seeing him risk his life and taking crazy bumps when he doesn't need to. But quite frankly, I wouldn't call it a highlight of anything. You look for it. Shane throws bad punches. We know that, so we expect more bad punches. But you know, I'm sure he's financially healthy. He still has stock in the company, and if he's got other pursuits, you know, I'd say instead of sitting around and simmering, you know, and worrying about why didn't I get picked to be here or do this or do that, is move on, man. You know, I don't know, but Stephanie, I think, is over the fact. I mean, she doesn't need to perform any longer. I mean, she realizes her position and what she needs to do and needs to concentrate on that. And I think if Shane were in the same situation, if his head was in, or his head were there, maybe he'd come back and be of value too. But he wants to be a wrestler, and I want to play basketball in the NBA. I'm just a foot too short. So, you know, we can both want. That doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get.
Well, I figure we were both in agreement on the idea that, and you told me as much before we started recording, that if there was going to be any real changes in creative and direction and just overall presentation of the show, you shouldn't expect it to happen in the next week or even in the next month. Any changes are going to be gradual. And maybe, in all, I'm kind of cackling at this, but maybe we actually saw a slightly gradual change this week on Raw when they didn't immediately embarrass Rey Mysterio. Don't get me wrong.
They waited a while.
They waited a while, which is a bit of a departure. And he did actually get a chance to have a really nice, heartfelt speech and win a match, no less. So to me, it felt just more like an advancement of an angle, which is why I was totally okay with it in the end after I had a lot of concerns about it. Who knows whether that had anything to do with Vince or Triple H or not. But in looking, there's a lot of retrospective. I think a lot of people have spent this past week looking back at Vince McMahon's career and his time in the business and the changes that he's made, some for the better, some for the worse. And a thing I came across on Twitter during the course of the week last that I wanted to put to you was somebody had tweeted out a map of the territories from back in the day, obviously, and basically asked, if not for Vince, do you think any territories could still be around today? Now, obviously, after Vince basically rolled over everyone and went national, Memphis survived for a good long time. They were well into the late 90s, still on television in Memphis, and I can't say doing great business, but they were chugging along for long after everybody else had basically closed up shop. Do you think that there was anybody else who might have had the opportunity, if not for Vince, not just if there was someone else? Oh, you know what? I'll separate that first. There's another related question I want to ask, but I'll hold off on that. If not for Vince, do you think any other territories might still be surviving in some shape, form, or fashion, or would have lasted a lot longer than they did?
Oh, I think, you know, and when I saw that question, I thought, well, the territories I've never worked in or don't really have an inside, never had an inside look at, I'd be hard pressed to. It just would be strictly speculation or just guess, closing my eyes and pointing at something, right? And say, yep, they'll probably. But the ones where I've worked, I think, Charlotte, Crockett's Mid-Atlantic wouldn't have had to press so hard to, take and encompass the entire United States. So I think they would have settled. I mean, they've stepped outside of their particular region a little bit, as well. But still, I think they would have survived. Now Atlanta, I don't know. Territory was strong, but with Ole and Barnett, at odds constantly for whatever reason, I'm not sure. Now, the thought there is, would Jack and Jerry Briscoe have sold their interest to McMahon, where he was put in a position to move in and take over? And if they wouldn't have, if there wouldn't have been an opportunity for somebody to buy that, I mean, they could have sold to somebody else, but I don't think it would have changed the world necessarily. And if Ole and Jim Barnett had been able to, coexist a little better, and, there's no reason that territory. Now, they had spread out, of course, because, I ran tours in 82 and 83 in Ohio, Michigan, and West Virginia for Georgia. But then that was the extent of this, Now, before I left, I had gone into Cleveland. Jim had called me and said, go to, I'll tell you some of the crazy things that went on back then. I had been home. I was back here in Knoxville off the tour, and I got a call, Les, I need you to fly to Cleveland, find a motel or a hotel that has cable because we're on a cable station. I don't remember the call numbers or the letters or anything. But you got to find a hotel that has cable because I want you to watch our show on air. See how much commercial time has been sold in the show, make notes, then call me and fill me in. So I got a plane ticket, flew to Cleveland. It took me three motels to finally find. People looked at me like I was crazy. I remember, do you have cable and does the station on? Like, I don't know. Anyway, so I did. And made notes, called Jim, told him, that the show had run and, some of the commercials that were on it and so forth, so on. And then the next day I drove, I'm trying to think of the name of the damn city. It was Packard Music Hall, the city where Packard automobiles are built in northeastern Ohio. I mean, but anyway, it was, we only ran there once, but anyway, took my rental car, went over there, checked the building out, made arrangements and set a date for us to come in there, back to Cleveland, and flew back here. That was my whole trip to Cleveland, Ohio, just to watch the TV one time. But I also know, because Jim had called me on another tour up there and said Vince had called him and said, what are you doing in Cleveland? Well, we hadn't, at the time, I'd gone and checked in with the buildings, and I guess somebody had said that somebody from the Georgia promotion was there. And Barnett called me. And he said, I was talking to Vince, meaning Vince Jr. And they said, Cleveland, did you remember them running Cleveland? And I didn't. I said, my memory goes back to Pedro Martinez, who was based in Buffalo, running Cleveland. Other than that, Jim, I said, if Vince or WWF was in there at one point. I didn't know that. And I think they might have been briefly. But anyway, there was a little, you know, back and forth about that. But, of course, if Vince wasn't going to try to expand, then that wouldn't have never happened either. So, but now, you realize a lot of people don't know Championship Wrestling from Florida had been syndicated for years. It was out. Well, I know when Danny Miller and I went back into Charlotte in 71, out of Tampa, some of the fans mentioned that they had seen us on Tampa TV because it was wherever it was syndicated was bleeding in some into the Charlotte territory. But as far as I know, Eddie never made any moves, you know, to try to run the towns where the TV, he was, you know, they were making, I guess, making decent money off the syndication. But I think Florida, you know, within their, they would have maintained. Fuller came back in here after it died off and, you know, cranked it up pretty decent, but it wasn't like it was going to be there forever. I think we're having a raid. I don't know if you can hear the sirens running around outside the building or not. Anyway, this territory, as you know, we've gone through that with the war here when Paphos came in. It's all it did was kill the territory, period, end of story. But Ron came back in the mid 80s and opened it back up again and did relatively well. So, I think the territories that I've worked, I think Charlotte would have been still running. Memphis, you mentioned. And some other ones might have popped up, but I don't know that anyone, they also asked, you know, did I think anyone else would have tried that expansion? Bill Watts might have, but as you know, the oil business created such a, you know, problem in the state of Oklahoma and surrounding areas that Bill ended up selling his company to Crockett. So I don't know that, you know, I think the reason guys started spreading, you know, whoever was first, I remember here when I first got cable TV, that one of the Nick Goulas' shows was on, I don't know what network it was back then. This would have been like 77. And I mentioned to Ron Fuller at the time, I said, man, our TV is so much better, you know, well-produced than that show. Maybe you should contact them. And it wasn't like I was thinking we need to spread out and run in other parts of the country, but I just thought, hey, there's television, you know, and they're paying something for it. And he said, well, I don't want to run, you know, I have no desire to run there. Why do I want to, you know, that was, and I think that was a thought of a lot of the promoters. Of course, that could have changed as the years went on too. Terry Funk did say in a conversation that cable TV was going to change the complexion of professional wrestling, which in essence it did. And Terry, being the soothsayer that he is, that, you know, he was right.
Well, that was the reason he and Dory Jr. had sold Amarillo years before the territories fell apart, because he believed he saw that coming and thought it was prudent to get out early.
Yeah, yeah, yes, you're right. And, you know, but to say would the, yeah, I think, like I say, I think Mid-Atlantic would have continued. Georgia, it would have depended on the inner workings of the majority stockholders, you know, whether that would have stayed afloat or not. I think Jarrett and those guys would have continued. Now, would wrestling be as popular? That's hard to say, but I can say this. Through my 62 years in the business, it's had, if you put a flow chart out on wrestling in the territory days, they all had ups and downs like any other business. So, you know, but I think wrestling would still be around. It may not, it probably wouldn't be mainstream, you know, like it is now. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday and they were saying, well, what do you think when Vince brought it mainstream? I said, how much money do you think Dwayne Johnson's making a year? And where did that come? Where did that originate from? From wrestling. How about John Cena? Wrestling. So yeah, Vince created a much more financially fertile market for everybody, you know, if they take advantage of it. But yeah, I think there would still be territories in some, you know, they still would. If guys don't get, if you have a decent amount of money to promote today, I would say, I couldn't give you an exact amount. You need this to do this. But if you could get on television, like say in the Knoxville area, you could still run a promotion here. Now, is he going to turn people away? They did a big thing on WBIR here, which is where we were on in the 70s, Southeastern Wrestling, about the Kazana family. John is the head of the promotion when I first wrestled here in 68. And his grandson, Joe Kazana Fritz, is got a promotion running now. And his son, who would have been John's great-grandson, AJ, is wrestling. It just has started his career and is doing pretty well. And they had mentioned that was there was Joe put a big piece up on Facebook, if anybody's seen it, about Knoxville and wrestling and the Kazana family, because, you know, they're a huge part of that. But we got mentioned there too, because when they got TV back in 1969, Whitey Caldwell and I were the hot baby faces in Knoxville, and then the Wrights were the hot heels. And they mentioned that we had, you know, had some great record crowds. And one of the things that is mentioned in this story was that Whitey and I against the Wrights in the amphitheater at Chilhowee Park, the outdoor place, we put 4,000 people in that place with it raining. How's that?
Pretty fair. Outdoor venue in the rain. Folks are still packing them in.
Yes. Yes. Nobody's more surprised than I was, but yes, and we wrestled in the rain. But yeah, so that's, you know, I think there's, you know, there would still be a fan base. Now, would there be a multi-million dollars? Of course not, you know, but I think collectively that territories could still maintain. It's just a matter of not trying to get too big too quick, like any other business, or trying to reach out, you know, beyond your limitations.
Well, you answered, I think, over the course of this conversation, the second question I had held off on, which was if it were someone else who went national, who would that have most likely have been? Crockett and Watts are probably the most logical suspects just based on how successful they were at the time and the talent rosters that they had, which was rivaled any other territory in the country. And as is briefly noted in Dave's cover story about Vince McMahon this week in The Observer, Ted Turner had originally agreed to go into business with Bill Watts. You know, after Vince had bought the Georgia territory and got those 2 hours on Saturday night, fans were in an uproar about not getting their traditional Georgia championship wrestling. The show was not what Ted Turner thought it was going to be. He was unhappy. The people were unhappy. I bet the switchboard operators at WTBS were unhappy getting all these calls. So there were two things he did. One was he gave an hour to Ole for a revamped, different version of Georgia Championship Wrestling on Sunday mornings, which unfortunately for Ole and everybody involved didn't really go anywhere. But the other thing was he gave time to Watts on Sunday afternoons with Mid-South Wrestling. And the Mid-South program was immediately the most successful program on WTBS for that short several-month run that they had. And it done so well that he had actually talked to Watts and said, listen, this thing with Vince is not working out. I'm going to figure out how to get him out of it. And when it's done, I want you to take those 2 hours. And he and Watts had an agreement, but that was around the time Vince engineered the sale to Crockett for $1 million for that time slot. And he chose not to interfere, especially when he found out that Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair were part of that territory and would be back on his television regularly as they were as part of Georgia Championship Wrestling. So that ended up not happening. But if Watts had gotten that slot in 84 or 85, I could easily see him making that work at the time.
Sure, sure. Yeah, somebody might have done it. You know, Vince, he's what he has done is a blessing and a curse. He made the expansion work in essence, in part, I should say, because he reached out to men from other businesses who were more astute in terms of, you know, production, in terms of selling television time and getting syndications and things like that. That's the blessing. The curse is that these people, and they're still there, to, and that is what's changed things so dramatically today, is many of the people with money invested and the power to have a say don't know what they're saying. They're not wrestling people. And so we now have more of a variety show, for better or for worse. And so, yeah, you know, there's good and bad that's happened from Vince, what Vince has done. And, of course, the money that the boys, you know, are making. I mean, you know, I get tired of hearing, oh, you guys were starved to death in the 60s and the 70s. No, we, you know, it was up and down, but you weren't on a big long page, you know, 50-page contract. It was a handshake or your word of mouth. And if you were in the main event and you drew, you got the money. If you didn't draw, you got your minimum or your guarantee or whatever it happened to be. So, you know, you weren't guaranteed. Your downside is $2 million this year. Oh, okay. Well, I can deal with that. But so you, right. The guys had to be more hungry too, right?
Yeah, and the flip side of not making any money in one territory at the time was if you weren't doing well in one place, you could make a phone call and be someplace else to give it another shot in 2 weeks.
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, so there were a lot of pluses. We can talk about the olds, but I don't know where the figures are any longer, but a number of years ago, someone had made speculation that on Saturday night in this country, back in the 60s and the 70s, well, let's use the 70s because most of the territories were in pretty damn good shape, you know, through the mid-70s, and talked about how many people were drawn collectively. I mean, they only could surmise, obviously, and guess. But it was this, how many millions of people watched wrestling on that Saturday night, but they didn't watch the same wrestling. But the business still, you know, drew. And, you know, no, nobody was making $2 million a year. I don't think. The promoters, maybe, but none of the boys. But we were making decent money, you know. And it was, the business was good. And like I say, what Vince has done is, has pluses and its minuses. So it's just whichever side you're on, I guess, is if you think he's been a blessing or a curse.
We're a couple of minutes away from making SummerSlam predictions and hustling into some AEW discussion before this hour's through, Les. But one last question that I got off the board the other day, our message board at F4W Online, from a fellow radio person, as I am. How much experience does Les have with calling pro wrestling on the radio, if any? And how did that compare with TV studio wrestling shows? So I guess my question to you, I'll add on to that, is do you know of any companies that ever did wrestling on the radio? Because some of our younger fans may not be aware of this, but somewhere between the mid-90s where things weren't great and the start of the Attitude Era, at least, there was a radio WWF project, at least for the biggest shows. The pay-per-views actually were run by WWF through a portion of the company called Radio WWF, and those shows were actually called by Jim Ross and Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah, I never listened to that. But when this question came up, believe it or not, I remember doing a radio. Well, I didn't do the whole thing because I take that back. I can think of two. This was the one was way back, would have been in the late 60s, early 70s, that I was working. It was a spot show out of the Nashville territory. And they, in this, I don't even remember the town, but some local radio station had set up. And so I went and did, a couple matches. A couple of us did, different people. But at the time, I wasn't a broadcaster myself. But I remember doing another one here. This couldn't have been more than 10, 15 years ago, somewhere in there. Anyway, this was in Spindale, North Carolina, which was a great spot show town for the Crockett office. But I had been in there for a local promoter there. We'd done like three weekend training camps, one with Harley and I, one with Steamer and I, and one with Dr. Tom and I in there. And I forget, on one of those shows, some radio station from the area had come around. And so, of course, I wasn't training anybody the night of the show. And so they asked me if I'd sit in. and I did. I don't remember the station or, you know, anything. You got to be a lot more descriptive, obviously. You know, the thing I did in the spot show in Tennessee years ago, I don't remember what I, of course, that was legitimately a dead shoot, right? Because that was, wrestling was kayfabe, you know, or you didn't, or you get your butt slapped. But the one I did in Spindale, it was, like I say, it was, I don't know, at first it was kind of difficult because I started like you can see it, so I can talk about it. And then I realized they can't see it. So I had to be far more descriptive. But you would know, I mean, you haven't done a wrestling TV, or maybe you have at some point, but you know about, I mean, with radio, you are drawing the picture, right?
Oh, absolutely. As far as radio that I can think of off the top of my head, I think Radio WWF is the only one that I'm aware of where they actually called shows. But during the height of the Attitude Era, there were at least a couple of syndicated shows that, you know, were available to any station who wanted them, usually rock and rock stations on Saturday nights or Sunday nights that would air them, available in syndication, that were, you know, wrestling related hour or 2 hour shows that you could run on the weekends.
Sure.
That often had really big guests. I mean, the WWF was very friendly with those shows at the time. And it was not uncommon, if you listened to one of those syndicated shows in the late 90s, early 2000s, to have the biggest stars in the WWF being the major guest that they talked to for an hour or more on those syndicated shows. But that's the, once that died out, I have not heard of anything since.
You know what I was thinking of too, and I just realized this. You know, I had that 3 hour block on Clear Channel.
That's right.
For a couple of years, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On their sports station, and at the 99 Pillman, at the Gardens, Doc Love, my friend Chris, who said, "Hey, I heard he's listening to our show on Spotify," because he sent me an email. I said, "Hey, you gave me a shout out the other day." He and Patrick Black, who was actually the promoter for HWA, the out front promoter, and trained with me, and sat with Chris and I on the radio show. We did the show live from Cincinnati Gardens. I say we, I got interviewed on it for a few minutes, but Chris and Pat did that whole show with guys like Al Snow and Mick Foley. In fact, some of the verbiage from that is on the Pillman anthology set. Joe included some of the radio spots that Chris and Pat had done with some of the boys. And they had different guys sit in with them, you know, throughout the day. So that would be, I don't know how they might have tried to call those matches, but I'm sure they did. But yeah, it's obviously, you can enhance a picture that I feel it's easier for me to enhance a picture that you're looking at than it is to draw that picture from scratch for you. But, you know, you made me stop and think, as a kid, Wade Hoyt, who's a Hall of Fame pitcher for the old Yankees, the 27 Yankees, was the first play-by-play broadcaster in baseball that I ever heard. He did the Cincinnati Reds when I was a kid. And, you know, like he'd be talking about they were playing the Cubs in Chicago, or they're playing the Pirates at, you know, in Pittsburgh, or wherever they happen to be, the Braves in Milwaukee, whatever. And I never knew until later that Wade Hoyt was never at these towns. He was doing these, drawing these pictures for me in my mind, but having been at those fields, having played ball, he was making this all up, and it was damn beautiful. It really was. I was amazed years, you know, when I found this out, that he traveled only once a year with the team, and only, you know, so only once a year with the broadcast on the road live. So talk about drawing a picture. Wade Hoyt could do that.
Yeah. He was literally getting, like, was it telegraph messages of pitch by pitch? And
it was up to him to
paint the picture.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Crazy when you
think how hard that would be, right?
Forget it. Oh, That's just that's insanity. But it is what a lot of teams did in that era because you did not take people on the road. The setup was just too intense.
No, that's talk about a great artist verbally.
Oh,
Jesus!
Yeah,
great, huh?
Fantastic. I mean, that's the kind of thing, you know, talk about being forced to think on your feet, right?
Yeah, really. For sure. Yeah. For sure.
All right. So we're about to give our SummerSlam predictions. But before we do that, since we've had quite the historical discussion here for the bulk of the program at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, this is just some of the wrestling knowledge that's available to wrestlers and promoters nationwide. And hey, if you got the scratch, maybe even internationally, if you want to book Les Thatcher for a weekend training camp, let them know where you're available at.
Yeah, if you'd like to book me for a one-day seminar or a weekend training camp, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to send you out all the information, the cost, what I cover, and so forth and so on. And this is strictly hands-on. And I try to share everything, as much knowledge in those 2 days or in that one day, if we're just doing a one-day seminar, that I can possibly share with the fans. So, yeah, or the young wrestlers. And so, yeah, give me a shout at lesthatcher28@gmail.com if you're interested.
All right, my brother, we got SummerSlam this weekend with a lot of things going on, including Seth Rollins in storyline, causing his match to be postponed. That's where a good idea goes bad. If you're Seth, you're trying to jump Riddle, get the drop on him before your match this weekend, but then you injure him, so you've got no match. Whoops. In any event, we've got the other listings of matches that are going to be happening this weekend at SummerSlam. And I guess chief among them would be Logan Paul, who obviously signed a big money deal with limited dates with WWE a few weeks back. And maybe we should have gotten a hint then. It was very telling that the picture from Logan Paul at WWE headquarters signing his contract was with Triple H and Stephanie. But I digress. He's got a match here with The Miz. Obviously, this actually goes back to WrestleMania, where they won in a tag team match, and The Miz turned on Logan Paul there. Mr. Paul looking here for revenge. And I would imagine, since he's on limited dates and probably has a little more input than most, if he wants revenge here against The Miz, he shall have it.
Yeah, I think so. And they've been working hard at this angle, too.
They have.
I mean, they had him, you know, hey, we just want you guys to talk, but we're going to... And Logan Paul wanted to jump Miz, and they're back and forth. They've spent several weeks building this damn thing, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, they sure have.
And it's not the only gimmick match on the show. But anyway, if you're going to put Logan Paul over, then he steals it some way. And, of course, if you're going to put the Miz over, he also. But I mean, Paul would steal more in a babyface way, you know, where Miz thinks he's got it. Logan Paul, you know what? Somebody brought this up to me the other day, and this is as old school as it gets, and nobody uses it anymore, but it has been used back when I was a baby, when I was working. And that is, if you picture this, this heel, you know, does a couple things, covers me, and the referee gets 1-2, and on the 2, I pat the heel on his back. He thinks it's a referee.
Yes.
He jumps up and turns his back on me and holds his arms in the air, and I cradle him. 1-2-3. Now, I will tell you, I haven't used that finish 1,000 times or even 100. I bet probably not even 20 times over my entire career. But it actually worked a couple times, and it got the pop that we set out to do. But that would be too simplistic for today, right?
Allegedly, we're under new management, so maybe not.
Allegedly.
Yes.
Okay.
We've got the WWE Tag Team Championship match here with the Usos versus the Street Profits. Jeff Jarrett as the guest referee. Hey, the real winner of this weekend is Jeff Jarrett. Refereeing at SummerSlam, wrestling in Ric Flair's last match as well. It's a busy weekend for Mr. Jarrett. But with respect to the match itself... here's the thing. We've been hearing some rumors about Montez Ford perhaps being better off as a single and some talk about the potential in him as a solo act. The Street Profits, I think, really, really, if you're going to keep them together, need to win here and win these titles. But I do not expect that to happen, to be perfectly honest with you. This Bloodline thing is working very well. They've got the Unified Championship gimmick thing going between the Usos and Roman Reigns. And I don't see them disturbing it. So at worst for the Street Profits, if you're going to keep them together as a team, however they lose here, I think it would be best for them to disappear from TV for a little while and come back refreshed, refocused, and very angry. But one way or the other, and I presume it's with Jeff Jarrett's help, the Usos retain.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah, Jarrett is basically a babyface there, or at least he will be to start the match, and he's a big heel at the Flair thing. In fact, everybody in the main event is a heel at the Flair thing. But that's a whole other deal.
But yeah, but with respect to Jeff, obviously he's in there because it's Nashville, it's Tennessee, the territory, the ties with his family. But that's the thing I'm drawing on with Jeff Jarrett helping the Usos, the ties to his family. Obviously, he's not related to Roman or the Usos in any way, but guys who are part of family bloodlines understand it. This is why Jeff is going to be with them.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, my friend Jim that watches wrestling with me off and on, his story is if he calls me and I say, well, you're going to come and watch. Promise me I'll see the Usos against the Street Profits. And he's being facetious, obviously, right?
Yes, because we've seen it too much.
WWE did with him here what they often do. And to me, it wastes the guys. How many times have these two teams been at each other's throats over the last 2 months?
And on top of
that, how many matches?
Without enough of a give and take.
Yeah. And so what are they going to give me for $50? Well, of course, you watch it on Peacock. You know, I've got Peacock, so they're not giving me a damn thing for $50 because I'm not paying $50. But what can you do for me for $50 that you haven't done already in four or five other matches? I mean, it makes more sense to let them have a little build the heat, but keep them apart and then just hit little bits and pieces. But these guys, and I agree with my friend Jim, it's not that the matches aren't entertaining. It's just how many damn times do we get to see them? But yeah, I agree with you. I think you leave the belts where they're at with the Usos because it's working.
That takes us to the match for the United States Championship, Bobby Lashley defending against former champ Theory. Here's where I get really, I think I've gotten myself crossed up here, because I've long said for some of our long-time listeners, the key to making accurate predictions at WWE pay-per-views isn't to necessarily predict the thing that makes the most sense. It's to try and understand how Vince thinks and do what he would do in this situation. And so now I'm kind of torn because he's technically not here anymore. I'm looking at this match and I'm thinking Theory has lost everything under the sun and been embarrassed on TV a couple of times since he's gotten the briefcase. And if Vince were absolutely firmly in control of this company, I think Theory might not win another match until he cashes in the briefcase and wins the championship. But Bobby Lashley doesn't need this title either. And if someone else is in charge, they might be looking at this and saying, yes, Theory has the briefcase, but it might be best to have Theory figure out a way to slip over Bobby here, take the title, and have Bobby win on TV for the next few weeks and get him separated from this title, but also get him some wins so that he's one of Roman's eventual challengers here, either before or after McIntyre in September.
Or if you don't want to beat Theory or you don't want to beat Bobby, maybe that guy that Bobby should be wrestling for that title next would do a run-in here. And you know I'm not for millions and millions of run-ins, but it means that neither guy ends up losing. It comes by disqualification. Whoever if he comes in and attacks Theory, then or attacks Bobby, then Theory's disqualified, right? And Bobby maintains, and him and this guy set up a title thing, and then Theory can move on. That makes sense.
It does. Yeah, that's potential here. I guess if I have to pick one person here, I would say, gosh, again, if it were Vince, I would say Lashley beats him. But I'm going to pick Austin Theory to win it back.
Okay. We shall see.
All right. That brings us to Pat McAfee versus, I refuse to call him Happy, although I guess I just did, Baron Corbin in this match. Now, I would think conventional wisdom, correct me if I'm wrong, Les, even though McAfee is a celebrity of sorts, right? Is that the guy who's going to be on my television wrestling every week is probably the guy who should win. I guess technically they're both on your TV every week, but one is actually wrestling on a weekly basis and the other is commentating. So why would the announcer beat the wrestler? However, this sounds so mean, but it's Baron Corbin. Like he's not going anywhere unless something changes drastically. So I see no reason for Pat McAfee I see no reason for Pat McAfee to not get his hand raised in this. I'm predicting McAfee.
Well, yeah, it could very well be. I was sitting here looking at this before we started recording. I'm thinking, like you, pretty much, Corbin, he's not going anywhere, and he's been through so many changes and everything. And yeah, and of course, the thing of it is, it could be something slick and quick. And Pat's going to go move back to the microphone tonight. I mean, after this is over anyway. I don't think they're planning on making him a full-time wrestler. Well, they could start a celebrity division with Logan Paul and Pat McAfee, and then Tony can have his clown division.
I was just going to say Triple H will come out and say, you know, I've got plenty of belts nobody's seen yet.
Yeah, well, he might do that too. No, we haven't gotten to AEW and Tony Khan, who's the master of excess. So
goodness.
Anyway, yeah, wow. Yeah, I think Corbin ends up with a win here.
That's fair.
I do. Right.
We're on the opposite side of that one. That takes us now to the championship contests, all the remaining championship contests. Intriguing matchup here again with Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch, and here's why. Bianca obviously worked her way back from that 26-second loss, which I still disagree with, but she did work her way back, got her WrestleMania moment, won the championship, and has basically been not unchallenged, but has been on a streak since then, rightly so. Becky Lynch, for better or for worse, and even though she's a heel, has had some ups and downs since WrestleMania, but has worked her way back into this opportunity less to recapture the Raw Women's Championship. I'll be honest with you, this is one of those things where I would like one thing, but I think something else. I would like Bianca Belair to retain. I don't think it's necessary to remove it from her at this particular point in time, and there are other matches I'd like to see her have, like with Rhea Ripley, now that Rhea's back and healthy. But because of the way Becky Lynch has been kind of up and down, not only losing matches to Asuka, but Dana Brooke, of all people, in the last few months with the 24/7 title and all the other nonsense that have been going on with Becky Lynch trying to work her way back into championship contention, I think the stage is set for Becky to reclaim the title here.
Yeah, I think so too. I will go along with that. You know, with Bianca, there's something about her skipping down the aisle, rolling her, waving, or whatever the hell they do with that pony, with that extension, whatever you want to call it. I think she irritates some fans. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but, and her promos are not, listen, if you pay attention to the crowd, when she does a promo, she doesn't get a lot of response one way or the other. And I think it's her delivery. And I every time I listen, I think there's something in this delivery that's, I don't know. And there's times because she will, you know, she'll a couple sentences and then stop to get a reaction, and there isn't one. So I don't know, but she's skipping to the ring all the time. It's irritated my friend Jim for months and months, but it's beginning to irritate the hell out of me too. What I mean by that is, if you're mad at somebody, then show you're mad. Don't smile and skip and dance. I mean, your emotions should match the reason you're coming out, I would think. Doesn't that make sense?
It would.
It would, yes. But with her, it's never, it's always, I dance and wave my hair and smile. So anyway, but yeah, she's a Knoxville girl, so I gotta be nice to her. But yeah, I think it is time to put that strap on Becky. The one thing I wanted to mention, though, I'm pretty sure that Becky and her husband, Seth, share the same seamstress. Because whoever that seamstress is dresses them both kind of funny.
They have kids now. You got to save money anywhere you can.
Okay, I got you.
The SmackDown Women's Championship match. This is intriguing to me on a lot of levels for a lot of reasons. Liv Morgan versus Ronda Rousey. Obviously, it was a surprise and an upset at Money in the Bank with Liv not only winning the briefcase, but then coming out and cashing the same night and defeating Ronda to become the SmackDown Women's Champion. Obviously, if you left it to me, I'd have Ronda Rousey break Liv Morgan's arm in 30 seconds and win it back. I don't know that that's what they're planning on doing. In fact, I'm actually going to pick Liv Morgan to retain here rather than Ronda Rousey because, I'm looking at the lay of the land right now. And unless Charlotte Flair is coming back sometime soon, or Bayley, who is rumored to be healthy and perhaps ready to return sooner rather than later, are going to show up. I don't know that there's anyone I want to see Ronda Rousey against currently on this roster. If those two aren't going to be back anytime soon, I think we've gotten all we can get, at least out of this particular round of Ronda Rousey. So there's no reason not to leave it on Liv Morgan.
Yeah. And I think Liv is fresh. She got a great, great reception from the fans when she won it. She seems to get a good reception, you know, her coming out for the promos and stuff. So, yes, I think it would be more harmful to the value. She has become more valuable with the belt, and I think I would leave it on her at least one more time around, maybe two, so she maintains some of that value even after she's lost the belt back to somebody. But I think if they take it off of her now, then she's been a flash in the pan, and that's the way she's going to be looked at.
And whether or not you agree with her winning the title in the first place, you don't want to end up doing that to anybody because you want them to be able to have value to the company.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And a fresh face.
Yes.
It won't hurt, and leave the belt on her for a couple rounds for sure.
Well, listen, if the video we saw a few weeks ago is any indication, Liv should be very happy Natalya's not booking this division. In any event, the Universal right. Championship match, last man standing for all the gold in WWE with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. Listen, I'm not mad at the company for this. They didn't think they were going to be doing this again, certainly not anytime soon. Situations developed. The team was in need. Brock Lesnar answered the call. So we're here, and Brock continues to be some, maybe perhaps the luckiest man outside of Vince McMahon in the history of this business. Getting these last minute calls for large sums of money. Then Vince obviously has to resign last week or is sent packing. Brock reportedly leaves the building. I can't imagine it didn't take a briefcase full of dollars to bring him back. He once again is on the right side of this. I don't know how that works for him, but man, wherever he's been keeping that rabbit's foot, I hope he drops it and I find it. In any event, no reason to make any changes here. This should be, I don't want to even say a coronation, because he's had the belt for 700 days in terms of Roman Reigns. But this is where he puts the definitive period at the end of the sentence on this rivalry. And whether they position it like this or not, it reminds me of a good old, in a weird way, because they haven't booked it this way, but of New Japan booking, in that you have this matchup at the top of the card that happens every few months over and over again, because it's one guy trying to finally establish himself over the other. And the win at WrestleMania was with help. This is a last man standing match. There may be some help here as well. But I think by the time this one is done, there's no question that Roman Reigns has finally climbed the mountain and surpassed Brock Lesnar in definitive fashion and moves on as champion.
Now, I don't see a problem with that. I would, again, find Brock. Brock, I love Brock as a babyface. I do. He comes across as so congenial. So fun to be around.
Description rarely used to describe Brock Lesnar.
Right. A congenial Brock Lesnar. No, never mind. Anyway, but he can still, you know, there are some good, strong mid-card heels. Here again, McIntyre and Sheamus, let's separate them at the hip too, okay? How many friggin' matches have that, you know? Anyway, Brock could work with a couple other heels, and him and Roman can go again at some point. I mean, it doesn't have to be the bitter end. And then if then maybe by that time, you would want to put it on Brock again. I don't think Theory is ready yet, and I'm not the only one that feels that way, I know. I see a lot of a future for the kid, and I see a lot of potential, but I don't think it's today. You know, I think he needs a little more seasoning and everything, but his promos are getting better, and but I don't think now's the time to pull the trigger and make him your top guy. But so I'm going to go along with you. I think whatever the finish is here, Roman retains, because yes, he is, to me right now, is the hottest heel in professional wrestling, period.
You know, I didn't mention this when we talked about Lashley in Theory, but perhaps I should take that into more consideration. The idea that everybody, all the folks who are left watching, have been left with a distinct impression the last few months, and they played off of it this week on television, that Theory is Vince McMahon's pet project. And now that Daddy's not here to help you, as Roman talked about this week, you know, how are things going to shake out for this guy? I think it actually is an interesting and potentially open question, but I guess I would point out that he was utilized favorably in NXT as well. So I imagine that Vince was not the only person who was high on him. But it does bear worth watching, not necessarily You know, under the category of things are more interesting behind the scenes than in the ring, to see Theory's immediate next direction over the next few months and whether or not he actually successfully cashes in this briefcase because of the perception that he was Vince's guy.
Yeah. He caught my attention when he was in Evolve with Gabe Sapolsky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a good look, and I could see, you know, potential in the guy long term. And he has improved since then. But I think he needs a little more seasoning. But overall, to me, that damn match between Roman and Brock makes me want to see the thing, whether the, you know, there are matches like the Usos and the Prophets. I don't know what they show me I haven't seen them do before. You know, and I think that's one of the things that they don't take enough time to build. They put too many matches together leading to the pay-per-view opposed to waiting and making the people want it and make it more important, make it more special.
Well, brother, they're going to make a killing at the merch table this weekend for SummerSlam. No doubt about that. And WWE has actually entered into some sort of new partnership with an outside company for WWEshop.com that's going to be helping them run things there on the website. You got some pretty fair partners with T-shirts and DVDs and pro wrestling tees. And Mr. Joe Dombrowski, who is quite, by the way, making himself a great reputation, not just as commentating for various promotions around the world, but in the DVD and digital download business as well.
Yeah, Joe. You know what? I was one of the first guys to, I remember when he sent me a demo tape and said, what do you think? And I said, you want to be the next Gordon Solie? He said, yeah. I said, well, you're on the way. And he said, you mean that? I said, yeah, I really, because he's serious about what he's doing. You know, it's not about getting Joe Dombrowski over. It's about getting the product over. And he gets himself over by getting the product over, I think. But anyway, more, yeah. Pro Wrestling Tee is the Briscoe Booster T-shirt, the first ever on the market, put out in 1972 by Jack, Jerry, and myself. Artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. You can get that shirt at Pro Wrestling Tees. They also carry an I'm a Les Thatcher guy if you happen to be one, so check us out at Pro Wrestling Tees. Wrestling for the Heartland, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content on each. They're both two DVD sets. Matches, interviews, and extras, mentioning Joe Dombrowski and myself do the voiceover. Joe does most of the calling the matches, and I talk about some of the stories behind the scenes and about some of the talent. And you can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And also at those two addresses, you can also get the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology, the 20th anniversary, which is a 4-DVD set, over 15 hours of content. And all four of the great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001 with matches, interviews, auction footage, extras, awards. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, that from the 99, I think some of the radio stuff that Patrick and Doc Love did live at the 99 show will be on there as well. You can get this at PillmanShows.com. Or as I mentioned, at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibraries.com. And if you'd like to buy a shed, a storage shed, or just talk wrestling, I'm at exit 128 off of I-75 in Tennessee, Rocky Mount. Rocky Mount, yeah, no, that's North Carolina. Rocky Top. I don't even know where the hell I'm at this morning. Anyway, I'm here from 9:30 to 5, Tuesday through Saturday, unless I'm at a wrestling event. And stop by. We're at 313 North Main Street and right off of I-75. So, and if you want to stop or talk wrestling, stop in and see me or look at our products as well.
Well, my friend, normally we try to keep this show limited to an hour, but I cannot in conscience, since we spent a lot of time on Vince and some old school discussion, as well as the SummerSlam predictions, walk away without sharing a few thoughts on Ric Flair's last match here, since it's going to be happening this weekend. And as I put to you, another goddamn tournament in AEW. What's happening this past week on Dynamite? Well, I'm really mostly mad because Tony spoiled my thing from last week, because if he's doing a tournament for trios titles that is going to culminate it all out, then he's probably not going to do two tournaments with a women's tag team championship introduced it all out. I think he heard me and just decided to do this to spite me.
He probably, but he is the king of excesses. He has more talent than he needs. He has more belts than he needs. And like you, I said, another goddamn tournament. You know what? When Elgar Hayes fails, Tony, run a tournament or a battle royal. My God, there you go.
But it was a newsworthy week, not just with the introduction of the trios titles and the tournament that's coming, but obviously a very successful Death Before Dishonor show for Ring of Honor, a new Ring of Honor champion, same Ring of Honor tag team champions, and then the happenings on Dynamite with respect to Bryan Danielson's return and the surprising result in that match, not to mention some other interesting stuff that took place on the show this week. So some quick overall thoughts on Dynamite and some of the things that got your attention and what you would have done without.
Well, Dynamite, Danielson's back. Dragon is back. He had a good match with Garcia. Although when you're bringing this guy back, whether you like it or you don't like it, Bryan Danielson is one of your centerpieces, and you don't beat him after he's coming off an injury. Although they had a damn good match, except in the middle, where when Dragon went to his knees and then started to oversell, and I thought, what the hell are they doing here? At first, I thought he might have actually been hurt, and then I realized when I watched him move on that that wasn't the case, but I think he oversold. They lost me a little bit in the middle, but overall, the match was damn solid, and it's not that Garcia has no calves and I don't like him, it's the fact that that just wasn't the match he should have been dominant in. Dragon coming back off the injury should have got his win, and they could have done this at a later date, I do believe. So that was hell, like I say, that was the highlight, I think, of the evening.
If I could just interject real quick before we talk about anything else Dynamite or ROH related, my issue with it wasn't so much that Daniel Garcia won. It was a shocking result, and sometimes surprises are good, right? But my gut feeling is that I won't really have an honest handle on how I truly feel about this for a few more weeks. Because if they start to center this Jericho Appreciation Society, maybe a little bit more around Daniel Garcia, and Jericho starts eyeing Garcia like, hey, this guy's really catching on, maybe a little too much for my own personal tastes, and we get something brewing there because Garcia becomes more confident, starts winning more often, maybe starts barking a little bit at Jericho and takes more of a leadership role, I'd be interested in seeing where that goes. My fear is that Chris Jericho, behind the scenes, might look at Daniel Garcia and the possibility of him gaining a little bit of traction and trying to figure out how he can use it to best benefit Chris Jericho.
Yeah, thanks. You've been around the wrestling business too long. You're looking over your shoulder all the time. No, I know what you're saying. And, there is that possibility. There absolutely is. Absolutely is that possibility. We mentioned before started recording that we both thought Ricky Starks was elevating himself, working his way up.
Yes.
His promos had gotten better. Neither one of us liked him as a babyface on the old NWA show of a couple of years ago because he was acting like an asshole, plain and simple. He wasn't acting like a babyface. I don't know if they're planning on switching him babyface here, but I don't know what the hell they were doing, actually. They take the strap off him, put it on Hooks, and then his best friend turns on him and beats the hell out of him. So I guess that's where they're going. Maybe they're going to turn him babyface. But please, Ricky, if you're going to be a babyface, I don't have a problem with that, but I think you're a strong heel. But if you're going to be a babyface, please do a babyface promo. Don't continue to be Ricky Starks the heel. That would be my only call there. It's a little crazy, but I'm glad to see. The thing about the ROH title and putting it on Claudio. I think we mentioned, we both thought that was going to be happening because they built too much around Claudio and never won a major title. But I understand, with the ex-champion, everybody, if he thought he was disrespected, and it's possible that he, listen, when I made a couple of references to Tony Khan's excesses, and they are, if you've been in this business as long as I have, I asked a person who works for AEW a couple days ago. I said this last week on the air teasing, but I am teasing. I'm not going to give anybody $50. But I said to him, I said, without looking or writing anything down or looking at a program, can you tell me who is about every angle that is involved in AEW. And he looked at me and he smiled. And he said, "Are you crazy?" That's not a good thing.
No,
that's
it's not.
Then we are all, as fans, we are all fragmented, and we're trying to see 10 angles, let's say, and I don't even know that. I couldn't even begin to tell you. I don't know if Tony, I hope Tony Khan can tell you. But it's too much to fathom, too much to absorb, too much to digest, and good three strong angles and let the other guys have just good wrestling matches. There's a clever idea. And build them up and let them build toward these things. You know, it's just, again, Tony, it's excesses, too many title belts, too many titles, too many, you know, we have either a title tournament or a battle royal, but I can't think of anything else, which you're going to wear both those things out like everything else in this business. And I say that because I care, you know, I'm not interested in seeing that happen, but yeah, it was, but Daniel, Brian came back like a bear, and it was strong. And you know what? I thought Moxley's promo with Jericho hit the nail on the head. You're the magician. You're the wizard. You're the demo god. Right. You're all these other things. But, yeah, I'm not going to try to paraphrase it, but Mox had a hell of a promo. And,
by the way, one quick prediction, since Tony might be looking to spite me here. Look for the inaugural. This is just a random prediction. I don't even think they laid out the teams or anything like that. It might be another week before we see the brackets. Don't be surprised if the inaugural six-man champions are actually the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. And before you roll your eyes, hear me out here. Not because it's supposed
before
to be...
Before I hang up on you,
yeah,
you mean?
Before it has nothing to do with matches or match quality or anything like that. But the best place to put someone whose talent you value and want to use to great effect down the line while keeping someone who's just back from multiple surgeries healthy would be six-man tag team matches.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is true. If it, and I won't tell you what it is, but there's somebody put up a film or a video that the fact that Omega is coming back and it is of all his nonsensical things sexually.
the stuff that he's done in the ring in other companies, yes.
Yes, and this is the greatest wrestler in the world. And, God, if I were him, I would not want to have that stuff to be seen. But then, hell, I don't know what to tell you. No, we were going to wrap it up on Flair.
Yes, sir.
Let me say this: the three videos, this company for a one shot deal has worked the hottest, the best angle. I won't say it's the hottest, but the most realistic angle. The three videos that they did building up to this have been nothing but sterling and good and solid and I think, I hope, well received. But they're telling us the great story, and the angle was just so damn good. So, but the problem, as I said last week, is we know it's the end. So it's not like they're building. God, I hope they're not building for return. I shouldn't even say that. I don't want to see Flair come back and do it again. But they are sending him out in high. But here's the thing, if somebody asked me this, who the hell's a heel in this main event?
They all are.
Yes, every damn one of them, because the way Rick treated Jeff and the way he treated Lethal.
You could argue he had what he had coming to him.
Yes, and yet, you know, who knows? So, but yes, the angle and the way they worked it and everything I thought was very, very good. Very good. And as much as I don't want to see this because I love the man that it's all about, he's my buddy, I am proud that they put it together so damn good. And it's a shame that old school's not coming back.
Well, you know,
because it...
Go right ahead.
I was going to say, because this is probably the outstanding angle so far this year.
Well, I was telling you this off the air, and that's the reason I'm bringing it up, is because of what you responded to me with. Is that, you know, the reason they're all heels is because Rick gets to do this himself. And we all know that as much as he appreciates the love and respect he gets from fans and has for a long time regarding his incredible career, he doesn't ever really want to be a babyface. He always wants to be a heel. He would have never turned at any point in his life if you'd left it up to him. And then you told me something he said to you during the Pillman shows.
Yeah, 99. Yes. Rick was on the Pillman show. And the next morning, I'm taking him to the airport, and we're just, you know, kicking things or conversing and kicking things around. He said, you know, Les, I want to be a heel, and everybody wants to be, the fans want me to be a baby face. I said, you're an icon. You just accept me, but I prefer being a heel. I like working heel. So he's going to get to be both, I guess, on his final match.
Well, he's booking it, so yeah. You knew he was going to be a heel if he could help it, which is why I guess they structured it the way they did.
Yeah. And, of course, we won't reconvene until that's over, but I want to say this, that I must say a little prayer that Rick walks out of there without any physical problems or any injuries or anything else. And I expect Jay and Jeff to take damn good care of him physically in that ring. So let's all keep our fingers crossed and hope that's the way it works.
I am sure they will. If you're going to be watching SummerSlam and or Ric Flair's last match on pay-per-view or those various outlets where those shows are available, or maybe even in Nashville to take in the weekend yourself. Oh my goodness, good for you. What a historic weekend that would be, especially if you got a chance to take in both of those shows. In any event, we're very grateful you decided to take time out every weekend to spend some of it here with us at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. So for the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thanks again for hanging with us, and we look forward to having another conversation with you next week.